The story that brings me here tonight starts on this same occasion exactly 20 years ago. On November 12, 2004, Quinton Schultz stood here to accept the Religious Communication Association Scholar of the Year Award. His address, titled The God Problem in Communication Studies, was then published in the first 2005 issue of the Journal of Communication and Religion. Schultz argued, quote, "If God exists and if God communicates with human beings, how can we study communication comprehensively without taking into account the agency of God? At the same time, however, how can a scholar identify and interpret transcendent speech?" Unquote. At the time of Schultz's essay, I was at a crossroads. After 20 years in religious publishing and broadcasting, my nest was empty. In 2005, the same year that Schultz published The God Problem, I decided to go back to school and enrolled in Spring Arbor University's online Master of Arts program in communication. Reading his essay that year and embarking on my coursework began a career-defining chain of events. That fall, my text for COM 504 Introduction to Communication Theory was M. Griffin's A First Look at Communication. I was enthralled. Things I'd wondered about all my adult life could now be explained. Then I came to Chapter 33, Speech Codes Theory. Since I came to Christ as a first-year college student, I didn't grow up with ESL, or Evangelical as a Second Language. So I always noticed how people in my church assumed a different mode of speaking and a distinctive lingo when talking among themselves. Speech Codes Theory and the Ethnography of Communication promised some answers. So now I've set the stage, starting with Quinton Schultz's RCA banquet speech 20 years ago, how as a new graduate student I encountered his essay, and how I started on the research agenda that has defined my career. And with that introduction, let me state my argument. We need to restart the conversation on the God problem. Call it the God problem 2.0. I'll make my argument in four steps. First, I'll tell the rest of my story and how I formulated my own approach to the God problem. Second, I'll describe what I found about the state of our conversation on the problem. Third, I'll share productive approaches to the God problem that have been taken by scholars in past RCA panel discussions and the edited volume that resulted. And fourth, I'll argue for what scholars who study religious communication need to discuss about the God problem going forward. Again, the God problem 2.0. In the end, I believe that we must develop approaches to the God problem that, 1, are intellectually defensible as producing solid scholarship that meets the standards of the communication studies discipline. 2, do not substitute faith claims for empirical evidence. 3, follow the evidence where it leads without presupposing the answers that we may desire to protect our religious viewpoints. 4, present evidence accessible to all scholars and allow our scholarship to benefit from rigorous peer critique. And 5, take seriously our ethical obligations when we encounter harmful and oppressive communication in the religious communities that we study. Let me move now to the first step in my argument and relate how I developed my approach to the God problem. To begin, I grew up in Washington, D.C. during the Cold War. After college, I spent a decade in publications management with Washington-based national nonprofits. Then in 1987, God called me to manage publications for an international evangelistic ministry. 2 years later, in 1989, the Berlin Wall fell and my world was completely remade. But how could I understand this new world without understanding what had gone before? So I read everything I could on the history of the 20th century. Soon I was convinced that the Holocaust was the hinge where the Western culture of bureaucratic and technological organization, my culture, revealed its latent dark side. The final solution also raised the question of theodicy, or God's justice in the world. In time, my career in evangelical ministry ran its course, my two children graduated from college, and my nest was empty. I decided to pursue a master's degree and continue my research on the final solution through the lens of communication and culture. And that's when I encountered Quinton Schultz's Journal of Communication and Religion essay on The God Problem in Communication Studies. His problem was directly relevant to questions of theodicy that were raised by my research. In 2007, I continued my research as a doctoral student at Clemson University. Ultimately, I became convinced by the approach taken by Yehuda Bauer, the Dean of Holocaust Historians who passed away in October 2024. He argued that if the Holocaust is ascribed to demonism and the supernatural, then that's the total answer, and research on human causes becomes moot. Yet at the same time, I was also convinced of Quentin Schultz's call to, quote, keep on the agenda a possible relationship between belief and knowledge, unquote. In time, I resolved the God problem by confining my research to human communication, but leaving to personal faith the possibility that God may accommodate his revelation to humanity by using the communication processes that I study. To me, this resolution neither totalizes God as the total answer, nor trivializes God by attempting to fit the supernatural into my research box. Next, I move to step two and describe what I found about the disciplinary conversation on the God problem. An advantage of a graduate assistantship was the time and funds to attend conferences. So in 2009, 5 years after Quentin Schultz's banquet address on the God problem, I could join RCA, attend its annual meeting, and network with other religious communication scholars. What I found can be summed up in 3 points. First, scholars are naturally drawn to research areas for which they feel a personal connection. So RCA primarily drew from Catholic scholars grounded in the Catholic intellectual tradition, for which I've come to have a great respect, and evangelical Protestants who saw scholarship in terms of religious advocacy. Second, because RCA drew primarily from committed Christians, Quentin Schultz's argument for what he called theistic communication studies was seen as obviously the correct approach to the God problem. So I found little to no conversation on his thesis. And third, the dominant research method in religious communication studies was and is rhetorical criticism. But by then, I was practicing field methods, and when you're observing communication in real time with all its foibles and contradictions, and deciding in real time how to treat claims of the supernatural, the God problem presents itself much differently than when applying a theory to a static artifact. And now I move to step three and the diverse approaches that colleagues have taken to the God problem. But let me first briefly narrate how I went from Holocaust studies to the ethnography of religious communication. Every scholar needs a hobby, and one of mine is music. About the time that I started graduate school, I was invited to audition for a touring gospel quartet. Over 4 years, I traveled 30-plus weekends a year and visited some 200 evangelical churches in 17 states. And I took it as an opportunity to practice the ethnographic field methods that I read about in Chapter 33 on Speech Codes Theory in my COM 504 textbook. When I attended my first RCA conference, I was on the job market and realizing that Holocaust studies are dominated by historians. Publication opportunities for a communication scholar were limited. So with 4 years of field notes from my quartet travels, a research agenda in the ethnography of religious communication beckoned. Since then, I've conducted field projects lasting between 2 and 4 years. In so doing, I found that in observing communication and claims of the supernatural in real time, and balancing your own beliefs in real time about these claims, the God problem is more fluid and ambiguous than when applying a theory to a static rhetorical artifact. So as a still new assistant professor, I put my approach to the God problem in print with a chapter in Daniel Brown's 2013 edited volume, A Communication Perspective on Interfaith Dialogue, and in a 2015 Journal of Communication and Religion article. At the same time, I got to know Quentin Schultz through our annual RCA conferences. What I learned is that Schultz never intended his essay on the God problem to end the conversation, but to begin the conversation. So he encouraged me to take the ball and run with it. For the 2019 and 2020 RCA conferences, the 15th anniversaries of his RCA banquet address and then his Journal of Communication and Religion essay, I organized panel discussions on the God problem. As the panel organizer, I charged participants to address 4 methodological subproblems. 1. Should the analyst admit the possibility of divine human communication? 2. What is the analyst's standing in relation to the religious community? 3. What is the analyst's standing in relation to the religious community's beliefs? And 4. What is the analyst's standing in relation to the academy? Out of these panel discussions came the eventual edited volume, God Talk, The Problem of Divine Human Communication. And I was excited to work with both younger and seasoned scholars, especially younger scholars who'd read my work and were developing new research agendas in religious communication using field methods. At the same time, I was also thrilled for Quentin Schultz to join the project as a contributor, with a final chapter in which he reconsidered the God problem after nearly 20 years. Broadly speaking, three approaches to the God problem emerged in God Talk. One approach calls on scholars to recognize that when you study a religious community, that community is the best expert on what it knows. So as a researcher, you should step back from being the expert, recognize that there are other ways of knowing than those that the Western Academy privileges, and accept the community's claims of divine communication as true. Another approach would embrace your own theism and affirm the ontological reality of divine communication. These scholars argue this stance is justified because informants have testified to its reality and you yourself have experienced it. My own approach, described earlier, confines study to human communication processes and leaves to personal faith the possibility of divine speech. Through my work as editor of God Talk, I learned a lot from the contributors, both from their ideas and the literatures they cited. All agreed, however, on one point. Here is how I put it in the introduction to the volume. Quote, "In the end, none of the chapters in this volume advocate a research method to directly observe divine speech. In each case, such speech, even if held to be an ontological reality by a religious community or by the researcher, is observed indirectly as an artifact of human communication when informants testify of their experiences. Even the contributors to this volume who are committed theists find at last that God's agency cannot be directly taken into account." Unquote. And so the God problem remains. My own chapter in God Talk, titled Toward a Theory of Divine Communication, Prospects and Problems, takes readers systematically through the standard models of our discipline. Our three basic communication models, seven communication contexts, and seven theoretical traditions. In this, I found a fatal limitation. The very act of positing a God problem in communication studies implies certain assumptions about the nature of God and the nature of a problem. That is, the God problem in communication studies necessarily assumes a God who is personal and knowable, and thus can be a communicator whose communications can be understood, and assumes a problem that can be addressed through reason, because God is conceived as a rational actor whose communications follow predictable patterns. In other words, the God problem in communication studies assumes a Western Christian conception of God. In the end, my chapter concludes with this observation. Quote, "I'm left where I'm started. Indeed, having now spun out the prospects for a useful theory of divine communication, I'm more convinced that the problems are at last a bridge too far. As I've demonstrated, any theory would require the theorist to impose certain assumptions about God that would reflect the problem, solution, techniques, and dimensions of one religious tradition or another. At best, then, any theory of divine communication would be useful only to the religious tradition in whose assumptions the theory is grounded, moving the project inexorably from theorizing about communication to theologizing about the divine. In the end, my solution to the God problem remains as it was. As a scholar, I study human-to-human communication processes, while as a theist, I make two moves. I reverentially demur from the ultimately reductionistic attempt to theorize God, yet at the same time I maintain a personal faith that God may use the processes I study to accommodate human understanding. This is how I keep in my agenda a possible relationship between belief and knowledge." Unquote. Now I move to the fourth and final step in my argument that our field of religious communication studies needs to restart the conversation on the God problem. The God Problem 2.0. The final step is setting an agenda for what we need to discuss going forward. To begin, let me use my own work to illustrate how the God problem impacts our research. When I began my first field project, traveling weekends to churches across the eastern United States, I found rich sites for observing the evangelical speech code through spontaneous interpersonal talk. But I also observed that the planned locally public rhetoric of Sunday sermons and the mass-mediated discourses of national evangelical institutions had decisive social effects. This illustrates the IMIC approach to fieldwork, not entering the field with an a priori theory, but allowing units of analysis to emerge naturally from observing the community's interactions. So I developed what's become the major theoretical advance of my career, a tripartite picture of a speech community as having micro, meso, and macro levels of discourse. In 2024, Jerry Philipson and Tabitha Hart published an update of speech code's theory, the first update in 20 years, that adds several new propositions. Stemming from my work in religious communication, I'm the author of the new Proposition 8, quote, "Elements of a speech code can appear across the private, locally public, and communal contexts of their use," unquote. My recent book, Inside Evangelicalism, The Culture of Conservative White Christianity, is organized according to micro, meso, and macro levels of discourse and incorporates ethnographic and autoethnographic research. Part 1 covers spontaneous micro-level talk that reproduces biblical literalism, evangelical identity, and evangelical patriarchy. Part 2 moves to the meso level and how the planned locally public rhetoric of Sunday sermons shapes a culture of primary orality, generates pastoral power to lead through charisma, and functions as managerial discourses that regulate church members' organizational identities. Part 3 then moves to the macro level of evangelical institutions and how their mass-mediated representations of evangelical cultural norms sustain a coherent trans-denominational culture and an interpretive community sympathetic to white Christian nationalism, where the world is a cosmic dualism between secular humanism and a biblical worldview. Part 4 then focuses on autoethnography and how my experiences with evangelical culture afford telling insights. A conclusion section explores prospects for dialogue across the culture war divide when such dialogue is approached as intercultural communication. Throughout, I've enacted my own approach to the God problem, confining my research to human communication and leaving the possibility of divine communication to personal faith. Yet I don't hide my positionality as a person of faith. Standard practice in ethnographic research demands that you state your positionality up front. So let me conclude by elaborating my proposed agenda for the God Problem 2.0. First, we must develop approaches to the God problem that are intellectually defensible as producing solid scholarship that meets the standards of the communication studies discipline. Contributors to God Talk offer multiple productive approaches. Follow concepts of critical ethnography and accept your informant's ontological claims as true. Recruit a diverse research team as a check against confirmation bias. Consider phenomenology and autoethnography as accepted research methods for accessing your informants and your own religious experience. Be self-aware how you as a believing theist make meaning, and so enable the awareness to accept naturalistic explanations when these are best. And confine your research to human communication, leaving the possibility of divine communication to personal faith. And while rhetorical criticism continues to offer valuable contributions, we must also make scholars feel welcome who practice other methods, including field methods, media studies, performance studies, autoethnography, quantitative research, and more. And we must make welcome scholars who study contexts other than public address and may research religious communication in interpersonal, group, organizational, mediated, and intercultural contexts. Second, we must develop approaches to the God problem that don't substitute faith claims for empirical evidence. The surest way to ghettoize our field of study is to be perceived as engaged in theology rather than communication studies, and for RCA to be seen as a Christian club. I know that RCA is a home for scholars who are drawn to religious communication studies out of personal religious commitments, a place where scholars who are also persons of faith can informally network. And publicly, discussion of the God problem is a great example of what RCA can do. Would any other organization in communication studies even discuss the God problem? But we must also remember that Article 2 of the RCA Constitution states, quote, "The purpose of the association shall be to provide a common organization for the study of religious communication by teachers, practitioners, and scholars. The association is an educational, non-sectarian agency." Unquote. I'm not saying to check your faith at the door. By all means, network with RCA colleagues about common interests and concerns. Nor am I saying that you should hide your positionality in your research. Academic practice requires that you be upfront about your standing in relation to the religious communities that you study. George Marsden, in The Outrageous Idea of Christian Scholarship, points out that scholars with lived experience in religious community can be valuable voices in the academy who see connections that others would miss. Meanwhile, I've read solid scholarship grounded in the Catholic intellectual tradition. And my fellow evangelicals who are familiar with the work of Mark Knoll will know that he believes the historic Christian creeds offer a rich basis for pursuing the life of the mind. But RCA must also be an organization where persons of non-Christian faith or of no faith feel equally welcome and equally valued for their contributions to religious communication studies. Third, we must develop approaches to the God problem that follow the evidence where it leads, without presupposing the answers that we may desire to protect our religious viewpoints. Recently, I read a book titled Misusing Scripture: What Are Evangelicals Doing with the Bible? The editors critique faith-based scholarship as an oxymoron. True scholarly inquiry, they point out, is characterized by open-mindedness and open-endedness, and following an investigation wherever it may lead without being predisposed to arriving at a desired answer. Yet virtually every Sunday in my evangelical faith tradition, I hear biblical scholars cited for scholarship that openly aims to safeguard an a priori commitment to a literalistic view of biblical inerrancy. Given my experience of such scholarship, I'm keenly sensitive to when it may pop up in our discipline. In what I'm about to say, I have in mind no particular manuscript or paper. But over the years, I've reviewed manuscripts and heard papers that make religious truth claims and address their studies specifically to a Christian audience, including recommendations to benefit Christian churches. So I offer two thoughts on this. First, I'd ask the authors of manuscripts and papers that make religious truth claims and/or are addressed specifically to a Christian audience to consider whether a more appropriate venue for your submissions would be a sectarian or denominational journal or conference. This isn't in any way to demean your work. As a communication scholar, you can make a valuable contribution to your faith tradition or denomination by sharing how communication concepts can help your co-religionists understand issues of concern to your faith community. Second, I described earlier how contributors to God Talk, the problem of divine-human communication, lay out multiple options to employ research methods that are intellectually defensible as producing solid scholarship on religious communication that meets the standards of the communication studies discipline. Rather than making religious truth claims in your work and confining your audience to Christians, why not broaden your reach by using one or more of these methods? As for serving your faith tradition or denomination, perhaps you can take some encouragement from my own experience. By doing rigorous research and solid scholarship, my findings can speak for themselves to my co-religionists. In Inside Evangelicalism, I put it this way, quote, "Bringing to light the blind spots of a culture can be salutary. As culture members see the unintended consequences of their practices, they have the opportunity to change and more humanely pursue their aspirations." Unquote. Fourth, we must develop approaches to the God problem that present evidence accessible to all scholars and allow our scholarship to benefit from rigorous peer critique. Quinton Schultz asked in his original God problem essay, quote, "How can a scholar identify and interpret transcendent speech?" Unquote. All the contributors to God Talk concluded that supernatural communication, if it exists, cannot be directly observed in the natural world and could, again if it exists, only be inferred indirectly from informants' secondhand reports. Some communication scholars take a social scientific approach and others a humanistic approach, but the principle of falsifiability has some application to both. If you propose a hypothesis that can't be falsified, are you doing real scholarship? A good illustration is young earth creationism. Advocates begin with the hypothesis that the Bible is inerrant with regards to science and history. But that's a religious truth claim that can't be falsified, rendering scholarly critique and peer review impossible. Similarly, if you make an unfalsifiable religious truth claim about divine communication, you cut yourself off from peer review. The only ones who could critique your work are scholars who can access the same divine communication that you or your informants claim. But again, intellectually defensible approaches are available that produce solid scholarship on religious communication and permit robust review and critique. I can amply testify that I haven't made this scholarly journey alone. Along the way, my scholarship has been immeasurably improved and strengthened by peer review. Fifth, we must develop approaches to the God problem that take seriously our ethical obligations when we encounter harmful and oppressive communication in the religious communities that we study. Here I'd refer you to a 2022 article in Communication Quarterly that I co-authored with Leland Spencer, Craig Stewart, and Alyssa Varela. In our dialogue on the ethics of ethnographic research, I wrote about my own inner struggle. Quote, "As I progressed in my career, a question kept nagging me. How long must I describe a culture on its own terms before I gained the standing to critique its power relations? Isn't a decade enough? Indeed, if I exposed taken-for-granted gender norms, wasn't I doing a service to my informants? By denaturalizing a blind spot, marginalized voices could be heard, and dominant voices might even re-examine their discourse in light of the hidden impacts that I reported." Unquote. Religious communication can edify and inspire, but also demean and debase. The latter is especially true when leaders and members of a religious community use claims of divine communication to justify harmful and oppressive speech. In my own faith tradition, I've increasingly witnessed such claims used to justify patriarchy, homophobia, Islamophobia, and the racist and misogynistic attitudes that underlie white Christian nationalism. I understand that some of you, perhaps many of you, are faculty or students at religiously affiliated institutions. Perhaps you feel pressure from your superiors to produce scholarship that affirms your institution's faith commitments. Perhaps you feel that research, such as mine, that shines a light on the culture and practices of your faith tradition, will be perceived as criticism. And you may sense that citing liberal scholarship in your literature review could be perceived as agreeing with that scholarship. The best advice I can give is twofold. Your ethical obligation to call out harmful and oppressive communication comes first. And hopefully, you can make the case to your superiors that bringing to light any blind spots in your faith tradition allows your community to see the unintended consequences of its practices and thus affords your community an opportunity to change and be better. I close by pointing out that religious communication is the one field in our discipline that uniquely studies communities that make supernatural claims. So we can't ignore the God problem. We can't say our own belief that God surely exists means there's no problem. Nor can we assume without conscious thought that a religious communication scholar is a communication scholar who is religious, rather than a scholar who studies religious communication. For the good of our field, and the survival of religious communication as an academic field of study separate from religious studies, theology, or religious advocacy, we need to have a conversation as a community of scholars. Then each of us must think through our own approaches to the God problem, approaches to research that we can each defend as producing solid communication scholarship, grounded in empirical evidence that we follow wherever it may lead and is accessible to other scholars for peer review, even as we're ethically sensitive about the religious communication that we observe. 20 years have passed since Quentin Schultz stood up and first raised the God problem in communication studies. 20 years later, it's time that we took up the God problem as an opportunity for serious discussion of what it means when we say that religious communication is an academic field of study and how we practice it. So I look forward to launching the God Problem 2.0 and restarting the conversation.